Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Jim Kaysen, Associate Deputy Secretary at the U.S. Department of the Interior. Also joining us in our conversation is Steve Sika, Director in IBM's Federal Civilian Industry Practice. Jim, could you tell us about Interior's Federal Business Management System, or FBMS? Specifically, how key is it to your financial management modernization strategy in meeting the future business needs?
The FBMS, or Federal Business Management System, is hugely important to the future ability of the department to manage its business. The precursor to committing to FBMS was an assessment of the Department of Interior about how we did our business early in this administration, about 2001. What we found is that our ability to manage budget programs, finance programs, accounting, property management, acquisition, that within the Department of Interior, even though we have 9 bureaus, we had 180 different systems that did those functions. Those systems were not well integrated, which led to a relatively inefficient way to gather information, provide reports to Congress, to integrate our books, get our books closed on time, et cetera. And having the systems like that were of such an age that we had found that in some of the key systems that the support contractors would no longer support the systems. So we basically arrived at a time that the legacy systems we have just wouldn't do the job into the future. Our management team got together, looked at this, and decided that this was the number one investment we needed to make in the department so that we could manage our affairs well. And we've embarked on this project over the last few years to develop an integrated system that basically integrates budget, finance, property, acquisition, and a number of other subsystems into one common system with common data warehouse that enables us to have an integrated system that gives us much more cost efficiency, better internal controls, better integrated management of the finances, and enables our management team and Congress to get robust reporting out of our system much more quickly.
Let me switch topics for a moment and switching to something that is very real and in the public eye, and that's wildland fires. In 2006, according to the National Interagency Fire Center, there were almost 90,000 wildland fires that burned about 9.5 million acres. And so far this year, there's been close to 78,000 wildland fires that have burned 9.3 million acres. Could you elaborate on your department's efforts in coordinating the federal response to wildland fire suppression, and specifically your collaborative efforts with other entities such as state and local officials to effectively battle these fires?
The wildland fire program is an interesting one that is not commonly understood. There is a base program strategy that's important to know. And the base program is initial attack is the most important time. And the way the strategy is oriented is across the country, without regard to whose land it is, we first depend upon the local fire departments to go put out the fire. Because if you can catch the fire when it first starts and you can get it put out when it's really small, it's relatively inexpensive to manage. Then, according to this national strategy, if a local fire department doesn't have enough resources to deal with the fire, it gets out of their control, then we have a regional structure in place where other fire companies, other fire equipment and personnel are brought in to help with the fire within that region. And then once the fire gets out of the exceeds the capacity of that region to deal with, then it becomes a national issue, where on a national basis we use a place called NIFCE, or the National Interagency Fire Center, to supply national program assets. To illustrate, we just had the wildfire situation in Southern California. We had a lot of fires that were out of control, and this process worked exactly the way it was designed. What we had at that time was small fires got out of control. The southern half of California region brought in all its assets. Those were insufficient. They called our NFSI program, and we sent down hundreds, I think about 2,500 federal firefighters. We arranged for our fire engines and fire equipment from all over the West to come to Southern California to battle these fires. And collectively, as a team effort, we were able to control the fires within a little over a week, put them out. We still have some assets that are still there. In terms of communications, this is an area that a lot of players got together and worked well together. There were interagency discussions with Homeland Security and the Department of Interior, the Department of Agriculture, HHS, and others who said, we got a problem here. We need to manage this problem. Everybody got into gear. Everybody knew their assignments. It had been worked out. FEMA was on the ground. They were doing their thing. All I've heard out of this is basically rave reviews about how well the system worked this time in making sure that we were taking care of the needs of the people that were affected by those fires.
Jim, let's go back for a moment to the president's management agenda. Interior continues to maintain green status in human capital management under the PMA. Could you elaborate on your efforts in getting to green? What challenges did Interior have to overcome to get to this level, and what does the department need to do to sustain a green status rating?
There's a couple of things that's important to this answer. Getting to green is basically like the stoplight when you drive. Red is you're not doing so good. Yellow is you're making progress, but you're not there yet. And green is, okay, I'm delivering on the things that I said I would do. So it has that connotation by analogy. In managing our human capital program under the President's Management Agenda, we as a department recognize we have certain challenges that we have to address, and we have certain obligations to our employee workforce. The human capital management part basically involves some key issues. For example, when we survey our department and we look at our management team, we're in a position that we could lose as much as half of our management team in just the next few years through retirement. We have an aging workforce within the Department of Interior, and so succession planning for that is an important thing for us to manage our human capital. Because if we don't have well-trained, motivated employees, we won't cost-effectively implement our missions. So succession planning has become a key element within the department of the things that we do. That leads to recruiting. We are very actively out looking for new employees as spots open up. In most cases, those positions are advertised competitively, and we search for the best candidates we can bring into the department. It also implicates training. We have robust training programs within a department in a variety of ways, both put on by departmental entities and by third-party vendors that we bring in to give specialized training. So these are examples of the things that we're doing in our human capital area to make sure that over time we can address the movement of our employees into retirement, backfill them with trained, capable people, develop the management team that we need to lead the department into the next decade.
Jim, the department consists of a number of large bureaus with their own priorities. They all have their own challenges and workforce needs, and they've got employees working across all parts of the country. Given the size and the diversity of the department, how do you, in your role as the department's chief human capital officer, make sure that there is a corporate approach to workforce planning while at the same time making sure the bureaus still meet their own unique needs?
This is a combination of having a systems approach that is well understood to managing your employee base, and being specific about measuring your needs. And let me illustrate. In the management piece, we have a chief human capital officer. That's myself. I have a deputy human capital officer, a person of great experience named Kathleen Wheeler. Within each agency, we have a human capital officer that manages this on an agency-by-agency basis. And collectively, we try to marshal a consistent strategy and plan about how we attack this problem. Within each agency, if you move to the specific side, the type of people we need in the National Park Service is different than the type of people we need in the Minerals Management Service, because their principal function is managing oil and gas exploration in our outer continental shelf and managing royalty collections and processing versus preserving and conserving scarce properties, beautiful properties that we have in our national parks. So what we try to do is have an inventory of the skill mix that we need, figure out how we acquire the people that have the base skills, how we give them training, how we encourage them into management, train them to manage, et cetera. So it's a combination of a good, consistent way of doing business that is a management approach along with specific assessment of what each bureau or agency needs.
So Jim, to continue along this line of the diversity of skill and mission of the folks over at DOI, along with the geographical dispersion you mentioned earlier, 2,400 field offices, how does Interior evaluate HR field performance as well as impart some of the best practices across this broad community? And specifically, what steps are being taken to ensure that HR policies and procedures are documented and communicated in a timely manner and that implementation is monitored?
Well, two things. The Department of Interior, since it's been at its business since 1849, already has a set of policies and procedures in place that is robust, that has been developed over the decades. And what you find in that area is a fairly constant reassessment of what those policies and procedures are based upon your current experience. So you are constantly on the watch for, is this working the way I want it to? And if it's not, okay, fine, we need to change it. I embody a new expectation, communicate that expectation to others. Let me give you an example here. One of the things that we do in hiring senior executives, the senior most people within the federal government are called senior executives on the career side. And one of the more recent things that we worked out with the Office of Personnel Management is the time it was taking agencies to complete the hiring process on senior executives was too long. And so we worked out a different expectation that from the time you advertise to the time you send a package for clearance to OPM, 90 days. And if you don't get it in 90 days, it's not timely. Start over. So that sort of thing has prompted changes within our process to make sure we're holding much more tightly to an advertising period of time, how we panel those and review the applications we get, how we do interviewing, how we process the selection to make sure that we're hitting this expectation. And that happens across the board, no matter who we're hiring, that we want to make sure that the process works well, and if it doesn't, we change it.
That's great. What does the future hold for the Department of the Interior? We will ask Jim Kaysen, Associate Deputy Secretary at the U.S. Department of the Interior, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.